Hello, and welcome to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. I'm Kelly Taylor. Today on the show is fitness expert Drew Manning, who a few years ago was working as a trainer and purposely gained more than 70 pounds and then lost those 70 pounds as a way to better understand what his clients were going through. He's since become a New York Times bestselling author, hosted the A&E show Fit to Fat to Fit, and is really knowledgeable about the ketogenic diet. Drew also has his own podcast called The Fit to Fat to Fit Experience. And not only do we talk about the keto diet and, you know, fit to fat to fit stuff, but he also had a pretty religious upbringing in the Mormon church. We talk about that, his decision to share some pretty intimate details about his divorce with the world on his podcast, and more. So I hope you enjoy.
From the Fox 11 studios in Los Angeles, California, it's the Olympic and Bundy podcast with host Kelly Taylor.
Buenos días.
¿Cómo estás?
Bien. Muy bien. Oh, ¿hablas español?
Yo también. Un poquito. Hablo portugués mejor.
Oh.
¿Entiendes portugués? ¿Falo portugués? No.
Wow. Yeah, did you say your dad's Portuguese?
Yeah, my dad is. I didn't say that. How did you know?
Isn't that what you just said?
Father.
So like in Spanish, it's hablas español. In Portuguese, it's fala portugués. Like speak.
Oh, you speak. Okay.
No, but it is. I'm a quarter Portuguese. So,
wow.
But I didn't. I learned Portuguese in Brazil.
Interesting.
I lived there as I was a missionary back in the day.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
For like a year, right?
Or 2 years. Is that how long it is? You're supposed to go for 2 years. So, yes, I was.
Wait, what year did you do your mission?
2000 to 2002.
How old were you?
I was 19.
Wow.
Just a kid. It was a cool experience. I think every teenage American should go to a third world country for at least 6 months.
Yeah, definitely.
Kind of experience what it's like.
Was that the first time you left the country?
It's the first time.
Were you nervous?
It was really cool. Super nervous. But I learned so many valuable lessons. You know, just living in a third world country, having to speak a new language.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know it before. You're kind of just thrown to the wolves. And
so your dad didn't like casually speak it at home?
He grew up in Hawaii.
Oh,
so
okay.
He's also part Hawaiian. And so they grew up in Hawaii speaking English.
Wow.
Yeah. And his mom, my grandma's full-blood Portuguese, she came when she was a little girl. So she learned English growing up.
Gotcha. So you haven't necessarily, like if you were with your grandma, everyone would just speak English.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, she died many years ago, but she did remember some words when I was a kid. I remember growing up with her, she did remember some words that her parents taught her, but
yeah.
So it's cool to,
So you do that for 2 years, and out of curiosity, are you at that time like calling home all the time, or are you kind of intentionally separating yourself from?
Yeah, back in the day, you could email, which was new, one day a week. It was called P Day, and that was your day to like, you know, do laundry, write home. But back in the day, it used to be only letters. But when I got out there in 2000, email was kind of new, and so they were letting as email home once a week, and then we could call on Mother's Day and Christmas, and that's it. And it was super strict.
Not Father's Day?
No one cares about fathers.
Yeah, sorry.
Only
Dad.
Mother's Day. Yeah.
Wow.
So that was it, and that's kind of what you do for 2 years.
And were you able to pick the location you went to?
No, the church picks for you.
Wow, but it worked out that you went somewhere.
Went to Brazil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So I bet I have brothers that went to Australia. El Salvador, Dominican Republic, all over the place.
Is it pretty emotional when you leave for that long?
Yeah. But at the same time, like it's kind of like your quest. Like you're going off by yourself for the first time in your life. And I was like, this is what my brothers did. This is what I was told to do. So I just kind of followed suit and went to Brazil and just kind of had to tough it out, you know. And there was times where I was lonely and I'm like, I'm in a different country where I can't speak the language. And I'm like, what am I doing here? So
yeah,
it was good. Like I said, it would be great for every American teenager to go to a third world country and learn a new language, change their perspective and humble them.
For sure. So. Mi hermana, mi cuñado lived, would that be Viven?
Yeah.
In Guatemala. And we went to visit them, and they lived in like probably, it was like a 4-hour drive from the capital, just on the coast, almost near the border of Nicaragua. And
yeah.
It was so remote that like we went to visit them, and when I got back, I wanted to send them pictures we took, and I just wrote, there's no addresses, and there's not really a postal system. I literally wrote Los Gringos, like Santa Rosa, whatever the like town, state, Guatemala, and it got to them because they were the only gringos in the whole area. But it was funny. So like, I would agree that it was really humbling going there because just seeing, it's almost, you see people coming here to work and send money back to their families, whatever, and seeing the other side of that, you know, like the families together, and everyone that we met seemed really happy, but I mean, you know, they don't have a lot. Surprisingly, they all had internet.
Interesting. Yeah. You go down there, there's Wi-Fi for everybody for the most part. But yeah, you see people who are happy with so little, and you realize you don't need as much to be happy in this life. And so that's why I think it's really good for every person to experience what it's like in third world country to realize, oh yeah, we should be more humble and grateful for what we do have.
Yeah.
Instead of complaining like, oh, can you believe my Wi-Fi is down today? Or traffic is awful today. How am I going to survive?
Right. I am totally at fault for that for sure. So, yes.
Are we recording or?
Yeah. We just
jumped into it. awesome.
We just kind of like eased into it because I don't like the hard start.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool with me. I'm just wondering.
Yeah.
It seemed like it flowed really well. So.
So you said that you have been here since when? 2 days ago?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Have you gotten to do any, like, fun? Like, what have you done any fun things here?
No, it's all business. Work. It's all work, all business. The dinners, which were business, were still kind of fun. The food was good. The company was good.
Oh, nice.
Where'd you eat? Okay. I don't remember the name of the restaurant. Sorry. It was a nice restaurant in Anaheim last night.
Oh, cool.
And I wish I knew the name of the place, but I just kind of like was driven there and to like show up. And then the night before was at this Italian place. I don't know the
name.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
Somewhere
it
nice.
Good.
Yeah. It's LA. So it's all the food.
How often
seems
do you come
nice.
Out here?
Once every couple months.
Just to kind of check in and.
Yeah. Work stuff. And
so most of your time you're in Salt Lake.
Yeah. Salt Lake City, Utah.
What's Salt Lake like?
It's different than here. I'll be honest with you. It kind of grows on you. So it's a lot more affordable, a lot less traffic. You're right there by the mountains, the Rocky Mountains. So beautiful scenery, lots of outdoor activities, hikes, kayaking, a lot of lakes out there. People go boating a lot. It's dry. So, in the summertime, it's hot. Not as hot as like Las Vegas, but it's still a desert. So it's dry. It's not as humid. I actually don't mind it.
When I moved here, we road tripped out here and I knew Colorado would be beautiful, you know, and I figured like we went through Nevada and I figured that would be cool. I didn't have any idea of Utah and it was definitely the MVP state. It was so pretty.
Yeah, it is beautiful. And comparing it to Colorado, which is very similar. Colorado, you got to travel kind of far to get to the mountains. The mountains in Utah are literally right off the freeway, and you just like my house is right on the base of one of the mountains, overlooking the valley is just a beautiful view. So, and like I said, there's one main free highway, and it's easy to get down up north or down south, and there's beautiful scenery like Moab and Zion's National Park are like people come from all over the world to see these places.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. There's like a lottery in there to even do some of those hikes.
Yeah.
You have to get like super lucky to win. Do you go like backpacking or hiking or anything?
I do. Like I go hiking almost every week. So I have my daughters every other week. I have two girls that are 7 and 8 and we spend a lot of time together, and sometimes I'll take them on like easier hikes. And then when I don't have them, I always try and fit in at least one hike a week just to kind of get out in nature and kind of escape and just unplug a little bit. So,
that's good.
Beautiful. And it's just literally like 10 minutes to like some amazing hikes.
That's amazing. My husband and I go actually this weekend, we're going up to the Sierra Nevada mountains.
Oh, cool.
We try to go up there a lot. It's like probably about a 5-hour drive. If you leave, we leave at like 4 a.m.
That's
on Saturday morning. And this weekend we're going on a one night kind of backpacking trip. But the key is you have to get to the forest ranger station when it opens to get the permit, because we are like doing it day of.
Yeah.
So you're like, please, hopefully we'll get the permit, or else we'll have to just stay in a hotel somewhere, because they only let a certain amount of people in to do it. But it's so much fun. I really, I didn't grow up by the mountains, so being by them, it's like It's just really cool.
Yeah, it's weird. People from Utah go to California to escape, and people from California go to like Utah or like the mountains
yeah,
to escape. It's like,
yeah,
it's so like, you always want what you don't have.
Exactly. Yes, you definitely do. So I was last night. I rewatched. I've seen a few episodes of Fit to Fat to Fit. Fat to Fit to Fat.
No, you know, nope, you said it right the first time.
but I rewatched one of them last night, and my husband was actually watching with me because he hadn't seen it, and we were like, "That's like a true show that you can watch and watch a lot of them, and it's like so motivating to, like, I felt like after episodes when you see them get back to fit, it's like, all right, yep, I'm gonna work out tomorrow. I'm gonna, do you know what I mean?
100%.
Like, and I'm curious. Wait, so you've done two seasons of that show, right?
Yeah, two seasons.
Are you gonna, is there gonna be more?
Well, oh, we'll see. Knock on wood, we'll see. My hope is yes.
It's like, and because I knew your story, yeah. That's like how you went viral with that story.
Yeah.
Was it hard to find people to trainers to jump on board and do that?
Yeah, so when we first started casting for season one, I mean, here's the thing. It was hard, but also people will do almost anything to get on TV. So,
true, yeah.
You know, if you tell someone, we'll pay you money and you'll be on TV, then that we did have a lot of people sign up for it. We narrowed it down to 10 people for season one. Season two, we narrowed it down to 6. So, yeah, it was hard. But at the end of the day, you watch every single trainer on the show, realize how much harder than they thought it was going to be to do these journeys of getting fat and then getting fit. They're like, oh, yeah. At first they're like, oh, it's gonna be fun, I'll be on TV, I'll eat a lot of junk food, it'll be a good time, and then they soon realize, holy crap, like,
yeah,
I guess we can't cuss
the one it's fine,
holy crap, this is gonna be way harder than I thought it was gonna be. And then you see this emotional struggle and this roller coaster that they go on throughout the process, and they, at the end of it, almost all of them are humbled and realize it's way harder than I thought it was gonna be.
It's so hard. I rewatched the one with Katie and Mateo,
yeah.
I think from season one.
Yeah.
And I mean, she's like to the point where I think like she's like, I don't even know if I want to be a trainer anymore.
Shit.
It's like so much harder probably. And it seems like I'm not a physical fitness person really. I mean, I work out, but like yeah. I'm not a trainer. But it seems like if you are, a lot of your identity would be kind of wrapped up in like your ability to do physical fitness, your appearance, right?
Yeah.
And probably that's like where some of your confidence would come from. So it's almost like going through that, it like strips it away a little bit.
And that's kind of what my struggle was when I did this back in 2011, 2012, was your identity. If you grew up your entire life in shape, your identity is based on what your body looks like. And also the opposite of that is true as well. If you grew up your entire life out of shape, that's your body kind of becomes your identity. And so as a trainer, who was, for me, never being overweight my entire life, to go from that to all of a sudden overweight, I freaked out. I wanted to go up to complete strangers and say, hey, I'm not really overweight. Here's my before picture. Go to this website. It's just an experiment. Like, I promise this isn't me. And I freaked out. And that's what people do on the show too. They go through the same thing and they kind of lose their identity and they have to find themselves. Like, who am I without my body? Mm-hmm. Right. But I think it's really valuable for trainers and for myself to go through this process to realize you're so much more than just what your physical body is. You're so much more than just your body fat percentage or how much you weigh, but we put so much value on it, which is stupid, but we do it anyways because our society is based on that. And it kind of sucks, but this journey, this experience is very valuable in my opinion because it forces me and these trainers to realize that them and their clients are, there's more to this journey of life than just what your body looks like. And
right.
It takes something like this sometimes to open up your eyes a little bit.
Yeah, at the reveal of these episodes, you can like see it in their eyes and in their face, and the trainers,
yeah.
Like how much they've been through, I feel
yeah.
like.
No, you do. And for example, Katie, I felt so bad for her because she kind of wanted to quit, and we did have to stop early because it affected her so much more on the mental and emotional level, which is what, you know, transformation is anyways. She thought it was going to be a physical transformation. She thought it was going to be fun. But it affects you so much more mentally and emotionally than you imagine. And like, you know, we had to kind of have her stop for a little bit and refocus. And luckily she finished the journey. But there's some trainers like on season 2 that didn't complete it. Right. And but all of them come out humbled and more appreciative and more respect for their clients and a better understanding. Not a complete understanding. Like, there's no way you'll ever understand what it's like to be in someone else's shoes, even if you gained 100 pounds right. and lived it for 10 years. It still wouldn't be the same as someone who grew up their entire life out of shape. So, right. But it gives them a better understanding. Does that make sense?
Yes, definitely. When you were doing this, were you a full-time trainer, part-time trainer?
Part-time. Like,
were
you, okay, I had a full-time job in the medical field during the journey, but I had a part-time personal trainer
Were
job.
You telling the clients that you were working with what you were doing?
So what I did was actually stopped training clients during my journey because I realized, one, I didn't want to be in the gym as an overweight trainer, and two, I would be tempted to want to work out. And I knew I couldn't for 6 months. So I did tell my clients, like, hey, I'm not going to train you. I'm going to focus on this crazy thing, this crazy journey that I'm going to do. So I apologize, but I'll see you in about a year.
So did you tell them specifically what your intention was?
They all thought I was crazy. But a lot of them were cheering me on. They're like, you should do it because no one's ever really done this before. And and everyone except for my mom and some doctor friends were like, you shouldn't do it. My mom was concerned for my health, and so were the doctors. But everyone else is like, yeah, it sounds like a good idea, bro. You should do it.
Go for it. Yeah, it's so cool to see the clients' reactions, like even in the show, because they're like, well, shoot, this person's like all in. Yeah. And now I, like, as a result, have to be all in because they're all in. You know, they're like in the trenches with me.
I think what it does for the client is that they can see their trainer in different from a different perspective going through this, because they feel like, man, if they're going to sacrifice this much for me, it's going to make me want to sacrifice so much for them when it's time to turn the tables and lose the weight. Yeah. And so it creates a stronger bond, in my opinion, between the trainer and the client, because they have a lot more respect for each other and a better understanding of what each person is going through.
Right.
And so I think it's really powerful to see the client, you know, see their trainer go through this for them. You know, it's not the same journey as their journey, but at the same time, they're like, man, they're doing this for me. Like, I definitely want to try harder on the, you know, to get back to fit for them because they've done it for me. And it just makes that trainer more relatable to the client. Like, this guy or this girl kind of knows what I'm going through. Like, they're stepping into my shoes or trying to. And I think it helps them relate to their trainer, and the trainer can then relate to them so much better. So it's, in my opinion, that's why Fit to Fat to Fit, this movement, is so valuable, because it kind of bridges the gap between trainer and client, and people who are skinny and blessed genetically, and people who are overweight, because there's a lot of judging and misunderstanding that goes on between those two groups.
Yeah.
And this kind of helps to bridge that gap, bring empathy to the table.
I'm actually glad that you bring that part up, because we were talking about this yesterday as far as, like, if you're trying to lose weight, do you feel like is there such a thing as, like, having quote unquote skinny genes in your family or fat genes? I mean, because, you know, if someone like you said, you've always been pretty fit and then you gained weight and then got back to fit.
Yeah.
Like, do people, like, skeptics say, well, it's easier because you already, you know, you were blessed with good genes, or you were already that way.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's something called, obviously we know what genetics are, but there's also something called epigenetics. And I won't, like, get into too sciencey or you know, too much crazy explanation. But in a sense, we all have genetics. We all have our genetic ceiling. So their genetics do play a factor. But epigenetics are kind of like, let me describe it this way. Genetics are kind of like what loads the gun.
Yeah.
And epigenetics are what pulls the trigger. So epigenetics are things that are affected by lifestyle, diet, environment that we live in, toxins in our communities and in our bodies. Epigenetics are what pulls the trigger. So genetics are kind of loading the gun, but epigenetics pulls the trigger. Does that make sense?
Oh, definitely.
So
that's
you might have genetics, but that doesn't mean it's going to affect you unless your epigenetics kind of actually pull the trigger on those situations. So you can make choices to affect what pulls the trigger in those situations. So lifestyle, diet, exercise, you know, removing toxins from your body, cleansing your body, those can help out with the genetic factors that maybe you were, you know, unfortunately blessed with.
Yeah. Did you by chance follow that story about the guy who spent a year at the International Space Station? He has a twin. I forget his name right now. I can't think of it. But anyways, there was, like, a story that came out in all of the news headlines, and it was like, his DNA was altered from spending a year in space, but really, after the fact, it turns out it was epigenetics that changed.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, you know, it was a nice story to put out there, like, wow, a year in space could totally change because he has an identical twin and yada, yada. Yeah. Anyways, that's when I first learned about epigenetics.
There you go. Yeah. See? So that's like, you know, based on the factors that we're surrounded by, you know, yes. environmental factors. And those are lifestyle choices. They really are. So, yeah, do the best you can with what you have is what I tell people. And don't focus so much on the results. Focus on the process, yeah. you know, of healthy lifestyle habits and let the results kind of take care of themselves. But, you know, I think sometimes we overlook that and we think, well, I'm not going to try because my genetics, you know, I can't look like this Instagram model.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, definitely. So. Yeah. Yeah. It seems probably far away. Mm-hmm. And maybe you don't have a lot of confidence in yourself too to get there. So who was the first person that you, who's the first person that kind of introduced you to keto? Or did you find it yourself or?
It's a good question. No. So, it first became mainstream for me when I heard Tim Ferriss talking about this Dr. Dominic D'Agostino.
Yeah, he's everywhere.
He's everywhere. So he's on Joe Rogan. And he's really the reason, in my opinion, that it became mainstream was because he went on these podcasts that were really popular to kind of popularize it. Keto's been around since the 1920s, right?
To help treat epilepsy?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Children that were epileptic and had, you know, the medicine wasn't effective. And for whatever reason, they found keto helped out with these children that had these seizures and would help reduce their seizures, right? So it's been around for a long
time. That's pretty incredible that in 1920, they were like, all right, we're gonna do this.
From an evolutionary standpoint, though, we have this natural metabolic state that we can enter into that's kind of like a backup system so that if you stopped eating today, you wouldn't die today, right? Like even though we feel like we might die.
I'm gonna die, yeah.
You could last a long time living off of your own fat stores, and that's called ketosis. So there's two ways to get into ketosis. One is to stop eating, which isn't fun, right? Yeah. We love our food. Yeah. But to hack that by eating a ketogenic diet, which is high fat, moderate protein, low carb. And so I first heard about this, thought about doing it myself when I heard Dr. Dom on Tim Ferriss's podcast, and I'm like, okay, here I am, a self-experimenter. Why don't I do an experiment on my body to see if this is optimal for me? So I gave it 60 days, and I fell in love with it. And I'll tell you why. It's not what people think. I didn't lose fat or lose weight. I didn't get like shredded. I stayed about the same body composition wise, but my brain felt so much sharper. My brain was so much more focused throughout the day, more mental clarity. Improvement in cognitive function was like night and day compared to before. And I didn't have to eat 6 or 7 small meals a day like I was trying to do before.
Yeah.
I could only eat once or twice a day. My digestion was better. My brain was more optimal. My workouts were just as good. My body composition was about the same. I saw it more so as nutrition for your brain. And that's why I fell in love with the keto diet, because I can do podcasts. I can travel. I can be a dad, an entrepreneur, and only have to eat once or twice a day, or sometimes I'll fast. And, before I was like, oh, if I fast, I'll die or I'll lose all my muscle mass.
Yeah, or I'll be hangry.
My metabolism will slow down. I'll store fat. Like all these myths. And I used to teach them. I used to believe in them, to be honest with you. And now that I've been living this way and understand the science more, it's like, oh, that's why I fell in love with the keto diet. And that's kind of what happened shortly after that was I went on the Dr. Oz show talking about the benefits. And then the past 3 years, keto is just so popular now. Everybody's doing it.
It's everywhere. It really is everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. So two things. What were you eating before?
Uh-huh.
I assume you were eating healthy.
Mm-hmm. More of like a paleo-ish diet, like whole foods, you know, 6 or 7 meals, mostly protein and vegetables.
Yeah.
Occasional carbohydrates from like, you know, fruit and sweet potatoes and rice and cheat meals every now and then.
Yeah.
But I had to eat every 3 hours because I was hungry all the time because I was, you know, eating more carbohydrates and higher protein, not a lot of fat.
Gotcha. And secondly, when you went on the Dr. Oz show, did you get introduced? This is post going viral for Fit to Fat to Fit.
Yeah.
And then you just probably, I'm assuming, were like kind of putting things out there about keto. And then that sort of led you to go on the show.
Yeah. So basically, 7 years ago was Fit to Fat to Fit.
Yeah.
Four years ago or so was keto for me. And then I went on the Dr. Oz show through a connection with Dr. Dom. Oh. So he was supposed to go on, but he was out of town or something. And he recommended me go on in his place to talk about the keto diet. So they brought me on as like a keto influencer or expert to talk about the ketogenic diet and the benefits of it.
What was Dr. Oz's reaction? Was he a fan?
That's a good question. I actually wrote a blog post about this and Dr. Oz, why he said no to keto. So he acknowledged that there was a lot of science to back up the ketogenic diet and the benefits of it, but he was kind of very cautious about doing it because he's like, it seems extreme. You know, I'm still kind of concerned about these high fat foods and, you know, clogging arteries and being too strict for people. So that was kind of his thoughts and opinion about it. But he's educated on it. He knows the benefits of it. I think he's kind of, more doctors are kind of understanding that fat isn't the enemy and that we totally got it wrong. And that, you know, a high fat, high carb diet is damaging to the body. And that's what the older science was based off of. But if you have a high fat diet and you get rid of the carbohydrates, you know, you take out the carbs, it's actually really healthy and really beneficial for your body and your brain. And there's so many health benefits, therapeutic applications for things like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and PTSD and traumatic brain injury and certain forms of cancer. There's a myriad of health benefits with a lot of scientific research being done on it. So it's not just like this fad weight loss thing that it, sure, you can use it for weight loss, but people that are epileptic have to do it. People that have dementia, it's really beneficial for them. People with that get concussions, like in the MMA or in the UFC or NFL sometimes, they're looking into the benefits of the neuroprotective benefits for your brain. So
you have noticed, because you have a lot of people on your podcast, and I'm sure you get to talk to a lot of different perspectives on this. Have you noticed that, like, as time has gone on in the past 4 years, that doctors are becoming more accepting of the benefits? Like, I don't know how much hard science there is out there. I mean, but do you feel like the tide is changing for people in the medical profession to accept it and what it does?
That's a good question. I think the tide is changing because you have bigger names kind of coming out and acknowledging the science that's out there.
Yeah.
But still, like, it's so interesting. Like, the smartest people on the planet, which are some doctors, still, I think ego sometimes gets in the way and kind of blocks that from, you know, hey, I can't admit that I was wrong for 30 years of my life. And now it's hard to come out and say, you know what, I was wrong about that.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Were you upset when, because I work at the news, there was a story about how coconut oil is bad for you?
Yeah.
Right? Was that what it was?
Yeah. American Heart Association came out with that.
So, like, were people like, no, hold on, what? Right?
Yeah.
So, like, was that frustrating? Because isn't it, I mean, I don't know the whole background on it, but I remember sort of going down a rabbit hole of like, wait, I thought this was good for you. And then I would see like conflicting stories and then people who were like, no, there's more to it. Don't like read past the headline kind of thing.
It's so hard for your average person out there to, and this is why it's so confusing, because like one day it's this, one day it's that. Like, oh, fat's bad for you. No, fat's good for you. Well, this fat's bad for you. And all these things, and this is an organization, not to go down the rabbit hole, but like, you know, that it, for a time was saying trans fat isn't bad for you. And now it's like, oh, trans fat's bad for you, right? I think we all know that. But then now they're saying, well, you know, saturated fat from coconut oil is bad for you, but, you know, vegetable oil and canola oil, those are totally safe. When in reality, that's totally not true, right?
Yeah.
And so I think most people can see past it, like as BS, like, okay, they have an agenda here and I get it. But your average person just reads the headline, coconut oil is bad for you, according to the American Heart Association. People are only going to read that and be like, well, I guess I won't eat coconut. I'll still eat my low-fat margarine.
Back to vegetable oil.
Yeah, vegetable oil. And, you know, it's like, this is exactly what caused a lot of this, our problems in our country back in the 1970s and 80s, was like that whole movement of like, stay away from fat and low cholesterol, like foods. And look what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
but it definitely probably helps people like you and a lot of the other people who go on podcasts or TV or put books out and, you know, kind of try and change the thought about.
Yeah, we're trying. It's an uphill uphill battle, but we're trying.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm curious, with since doing this podcast, it's kind of like I've gotten a lot out of it, more than I thought I would.
Mm-hmm.
Like just getting to meet people and I don't know, like just suck information from them. And like it always gives me good energy afterward.
Yeah.
In doing your podcast, I'm curious if when did you start doing it?
2.5 years ago, maybe.
Do you feel like you've changed a lot since doing that and like getting to talk to a lot of different people and just like the continuous interviewing them? And
yeah, 100%. And even, you know, for me, it's kind of weird, but it's almost selfish in a way. Like I love like the people that I can access with a podcast.
Yeah.
You know, people are like, if I said, excuse me, if I said some of the people I've had on my podcast, like, hey, could I, you know, pick your brain for 10 or 15 minutes or 30 minutes? They'd be like, no. But then I'm like, hey, do you want to come on my podcast? They're like, oh, yeah, for sure. I love podcasts.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can access people that you normally wouldn't be able to. And you, gather so much information, talking to experts in different fields, and you absorb a lot of it, you know, suck it out of them like you were talking about. But then also your audience gets to access that information too. And it's so cool. We live in a society, in a world where you can download anything you want to know about, there's a podcast about. You know, you want to know about like Game of Thrones, or you want to know about like, you know, religion. Like there's a podcast, you can access the information so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, we didn't really have access to that. You had to go read a book or, you know.
Yeah.
So now it's just everything is out there, and it just makes this world so much smaller.
Oh, definitely.
So cool.
It does make it smaller. That's a really good way to put it.
Yeah.
I'm listening to, have you ever seen the show Westworld on HBO?
I've heard so many good things about it. I just haven't made the time to see it.
I bring it up all the time.
Is it good?
But it's really good. And I listen to a podcast that's sort of decoding
see,
Westworld.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Like, and it makes me more into the show, you know?
It's cool.
It's kind
and you could be like driving, you could be like doing laundry, or you're multitasking while listening to this podcast, this information.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost as good as The Matrix and just downloading it straight to your brain, but right. we're getting there, maybe.
Yeah. Have you seen Her, the movie Her?
The
with
H-E-R?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
With Joaquin Phoenix. That's right.
Oh.
He puts...
I know what you're talking about.
This thing on his forehead, and it's basically like artificial intelligence girlfriend.
And he can talk to
talking
her.
Talking to him, yeah.
Yeah, it's Scarlett Johansson's voice.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. That's us. Soon.
Hopefully we don't get to that point.
Yeah, sure. That would be somewhat bad. So I listened to episode 100.
Oh, you did?
And 101.
Thank you
and
for listening to that.
I feel like it just says so much about you guys, first of all, as parents, you know?
Yeah.
And... really like a lot of like how far both of you guys have gone like in kind of self-discovery, I guess, to like understand like the root causes of things.
Yeah.
Like I don't think that I've in that have done that kind of work, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's like, was that kind of, were you pretty nervous about doing that? Or did it just feel like, all right, I'm going to put some stuff out there and just like get it off my chest. So it's just, I'm feeling lighter.
That's a great question. And for everyone listening, you should go listen to episode 100 and 101 so you know what she's talking about. But like, honestly, I was still nervous, even though I had done years of work to get me to that point to where I felt comfortable talking about this. Like it wasn't just something like one day I woke up and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to talk about this.
Yeah.
It was working with a life coach for a long time, reading certain books that really changed my perception of how I viewed myself and how I viewed guilt and shame and kind of connecting the dots of how I was raised and my perception of the culture I was raised in. It took a good few years to get to that point. And then even when I did do it, I was still nervous. Like I was still scared. It's, you know, Brené Brown, her books really helped me have that courage to open up and own my story and be vulnerable. So she played a big part in that, getting to that point. But still, even putting it out there is still scary because you don't know how people are going to react. But here's the thing. It's always worse in your head than it is in reality. And so for me, all these stories that I was making up, like, oh, this person's going to think this and all these people are going to think that. And, you know, thinking the worst situations, but then when it actually happens, it's not nearly as bad. We suffer 1,000 times more in our head than we do in reality. And so for me, it was really interesting how much positive feedback there was from both of those episodes. And if any of you guys listen to it, you know it's basically me just kind of opening up and kind of being raw and kind of naked in a sense in front of all these people. And
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just a lot of stuff that, quite frankly, I think a lot of people would be scared to put out there.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but it was interesting how many people thanked me because it helped give them courage to open up as well to maybe their spouse or their loved one that was going through something similar.
Mm-hmm.
I had so many, mostly guys, reach out to me saying, dude, like, thank you so much. Like I'm in a place where I don't know what to do. I can't talk to my spouse about it. Like all these things that most men suffer with, like guilt and shame and, for me, I was trapped in that place, and I felt like this was beneficial for me to open up and talk about it, but also I knew it could help a lot of people because I remember watching Terry Crews, you know who Terry Crews is, doing a Facebook Live. He opened up on his Facebook Live talking about porn addiction. I'm like, here's this big, huge, muscular dude, like a man's man,
right,
talking about porn addiction on Facebook, and I'm like, and it's like nothing. I'm like, man, that is so brave of him to do that, and it gave me encouragement. That was also helping me during the process, like during those years of like working with life coach and reading those books by Brené Brown, that helped me get to the point where I'm like, okay, I think I can do this. And then when I did and seeing all the positive feedback was just, it was amazing.
Yeah.
And you know, there was maybe like one or two negative comments, but like I was in a place where I don't take things personally.
Right.
And so that helped me process that, but it was 99% positive.
Yeah. It also was just like probably an example of the more you talk about something, the less like power it has over you, yeah. Right?
Have you read Brené Brown's book?
No, but I think both you and Lynn
yeah.
reference it. So I feel like it's probably one
the,
that it...
Yeah, the more you talk about things that bring you shame, the less power shame has over you. And so that's one of the things she talks about. But the less you talk about it, the more it owns you, right?
Yeah.
And so like things that bring you shame in your life, but the more we normalize it as a society, the less power it has over you. And then you realize, oh, it's not that bad, you know? And you feel braver to share your story and own your story and be vulnerable and see it as a strength. Whereas my culture, my perception of my culture was that vulnerability was a weakness.
Yeah.
And it really took me kind of hitting rock bottom to realize that, but also seek out help with, you know, the books that I was reading and a life coach to get me to that point, to feel brave enough to share my story and be vulnerable with, you know, the world. And so I have no regrets doing it, and it's changed my life, and I know it's changed a lot of other people's lives for the better.
I'm sure it has.
So thanks for listening to it.
Yeah.
I didn't know you listened to it, had listened to it.
Well, it's funny. If you search Drew Manning on Apple Podcasts, that episode, it's like a recent episode, and that episode comes up.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's just like one of the more listened to ones, you know?
That is so funny, because I just Googled it the other day. Someone else was asking about it, and that was like the second thing that popped up for like Fit to Fat to Fit episode 100. Instead of Fit to Fat to Fit Keto. Or it was Fit to Fat to Fit Keto, and then Fit to Fat to Fit episode 100.
Episode 100. Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah, definitely. Out of curiosity, have you seen The Book of Mormon?
Oh, the play.
This is off topic, yeah.
Yeah, not yet. I missed it when they came to Salt Lake City. So
I've always wanted to talk to someone who like grew up in the Mormon religion
sure.
and like went to...
to see it.
Yeah, just like what they thought.
So I've heard what it's about. And I've heard it's hilarious. And I'm in a place now because I'm not a practicing Mormon anymore. No. I don't believe in it anymore. But I grew up Mormon. I read the Book of Mormon like, you know, every day. I see why members of the church would get offended
yeah.
by it. But I'm in a place now where I, you know, don't take offense to anything. And, you know, I've heard it's actually really entertaining. So it's on my bucket list to go see.
It's so funny.
See that. But you probably don't understand a lot of the stuff that goes on. In because you don't understand the culture.
No.
Whereas for
so
me, I'd be like, oh, I know what they're trying to do here.
Yeah. I feel like it'd be way more funny for you.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. so I'm curious, a couple things, just like we don't have to get into the whole episode 100 because, you know, someone can go listen to it. But
yeah, yeah.
My first thought in learning your story just with pornography and your marriage and whatnot is you guys have two kids.
Yeah.
And... my family also had some infidelity and, you know, every family has issues. And I sort of think like as I've gotten older, I'm a little bit more aware of how much I knew at the time as a kid and then like as a young adult that I almost wish I didn't know.
Mm.
And I'm curious if like, you know, like you guys seem to be in such a good place. Like you work together in some way. Seems like you're really great co-parents. I'm wondering how you are going to approach... just kind of talking about everything that's happened with your kids, like whether you just wait for them to ask you questions or, hey, listen to this episode or, you know.
That's a great question. And that's something that I did have to consider putting it out there to the world was like, you know, one day my daughter's going to have to listen to this. But I knew at one point they were going to have to, you know, they're going to ask the question or they do ask the question why, but they're 8 and 7. Like they're not at an age where they understand what infidelity is. They don't understand what pornography is. Like, I mean, at a very basic level, we do open up and talk to them about certain things like the dangers of the internet. And there's like adult things on there that they, you know, we need to monitor, but they don't really understand yet like the why behind it. But at some point I'm going to tell them, like, I'm going to have to tell them and I would rather them hear it from me, or their mom, like, or both of us at the same time. She would be open to that. I know for sure. You know, I'm okay with them knowing the truth rather than, you know, pretending like, oh, nothing happened and we're all happy and, you know, kumbaya, like, you know, I want them to know and know my story because it's out there. And I think, I don't know how they're going to process it. Maybe they'll hate me for years. I have no idea, but I can't control how they react to it.
Yeah.
All I know is that I can, you know, I have to stay in my business and my story, and I can't control the reactions, but my hope is that they'll see me for who I am today, and my actions will speak louder than my words.
Definitely.
Does that make sense?
I mean, for sure. I feel like you, I mean, and just like in hearing the hour about your entire, you know, 5 years of life, I feel like it seems like you've really, really owned everything and just like done some like, I don't know how else to put it, but just done a lot of work on like figuring out like what's going on. What is the, because that's hard.
It is hard.
To sit and stew in it and think. And I know you saw a life coach for a while, yeah. Right? Both of you guys. Do you feel like you would have gotten to this place having not seen a life coach, just like kind of doing some self-discovery on your own?
Absolutely not. Because no. My perception back then was, you know, I was Mormon. So the only outlets of help that we had were like, you know, your church leader. And yeah. Even though they're not licensed in anything, they're just a normal dude that has a job that has that calling. You know, they're a spiritual leader. But that's all I had access to, and prayer. And that was it. And I feel like that's cool. That helps a lot of people. But it can't do what a licensed or certified life coach can do, or some of these other therapists out there like Brené Brown. Like, her books are amazing, and I don't care how good of a spiritual leader someone is, like, they can't give you what you can access through these outside sources. So I had to be open to that. And so, you know, what I had at the time, my tools, those weren't working for me to get me to where I needed to be today. And mm-hmm. So I tried it for years. We stayed in the church and we tried to fix our marriage through those traditional pathways that we had, but it only got us so far, and we had to be open to these outside sources to help us to get to where we're at today. And even still today, I'm still trying to progress. I'm still, you know, obviously we're never going to be perfect. I still have a lot of work to do, but I'm open to new things, outside sources of help that maybe 10 years ago I would be like, I'm not open to that. That's weird. That's not going to help me.
Right.
And so, yeah, I definitely can look back and see what did help and what didn't help, and, you know, kind of where I'm at today and what can still help me, you know, progress forward in life.
Yeah. Have you met Brené Brown?
No. So if you know her, she's like definitely on my bucket list to meet.
Yeah, I feel for like sure. You need to, right?
I would love to. She's huge now as far as like her reach and like, yeah, that's my...
You need her on your podcast.
So it's her and The Rock that are up there on the top of the list.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they definitely listen to this podcast.
Of course.
So. Yeah, that would be incredible. I mean,
yeah.
To think like how much of an impact her writing had on all these people's
lives. Well, she changed my life.
Lives.
And I think a lot of people look at her and like, oh, she's helped a lot of women.
Yeah.
But from a guy's perspective, not a lot of guys are out there talking about vulnerability. You know, she talks about vulnerability for men, but there's not a lot of men talking about vulnerability for men. And I feel like she's impacted me, which is, you know, I'm a normal guy, like, you know, a man's man, if you will. And like, she changed my life. She's probably like my number one hero in this world. And, you know, maybe she doesn't know she impacts guys like me. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. So. That would be so incredible to know how much you impacted someone.
Exactly. And sometimes you think your demographic is like this, but you don't know. Like, you know, a tattooed, like kind of muscly guy like Brené Brown, I'd give her a big hug if I saw her. So
Brené. Where does she live, do you think?
Texas, I think. Oh. Somewhere in Texas.
She's a
Southern girl.
Nice. So another thing that I really liked actually in hearing you talk about this whole situation is you're very respectful of the way that you grew up and your family and kind of like your parents doing the best that they could, you know, like just coming when I was a little kid, my parents were just everything, every religion. Like, I think we went to Methodist church and some people were Catholic, of Christianity, a lot of different things. And then my parents split, and in middle school, one of them became Jehovah's Witness, and some people in my family did too. And at the time, I was kind of, it was influenced on me. They weren't like, do this or we're never talking to you. You know, it was, but when it's your parents or whoever that, you know, you look up to, and all these people I love and admire, and like they're my number ones.
Yeah.
You do what they do, like what they say is right. And so as I've gotten older and kind of been able to meet different people, and here there's like pretty everyone's like atheist. You know, I've met all different kinds of perspectives on, you know, what we're doing on mm-hmm. this rock. I really liked just how your perspective of being in the Mormon religion, and just, I'm curious now just overall what your thoughts are on organized religion as a whole, and yeah. kind of, because I think sometimes yeah. about, like, if you're a little kid and you grow up in that and that's all you know, it might be kind of hard to reach out and try different things if it's discouraged.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. So you're asking where I'm at today with yeah. what I see, you know, what I used to see as like religion and the way I see it now, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and I'll just speak to my experience and my truth, because here's one thing I've realized is that before I used to think there was one path for everybody, right? That's what I was taught to believe. And there's one true path and everybody needs to get on that path. And that was through Mormonism, right?
Yeah.
Even though I respected other religions, I'm like, well, they have parts of the truth, but they don't have the whole truth. That's what I was taught. Where I'm at now, I honestly believe in my heart of hearts that there's every single person has their own path, that they have their own truth. So for some people, that might be organized religion. Like for my parents, my family that are still in it, I still respect them. And maybe for them, like that's their truth. Is that everybody's truth? No. For me, my truth, the way I see organized religion, is that it works for some people, but at the same time, I feel like it doesn't work for a lot of people. And it yeah. creates divisiveness and divide in this world where some people who are of a certain religion that are get prideful about, hey, my church is right or my belief system is right and everybody else is wrong. It makes you look down on people and causes, you know, hate and judgment and shame and guilt, and it can control you and consume you and break you down. And for me, I don't think that's healthy for a lot of people, but for some people that might be their path. And who am I to tell people you're on the wrong path? Like, I'm not here to condemn or convert people to my belief system and say, hey, you should believe how I believe because these are my experiences. You have your experiences for a reason and they have their experiences for a reason. And those experiences mean more to them than any words or facts that you can throw at them.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like
Definitely.
Experiences are the most powerful thing. So for me, looking at someone else and who's on a different path than me, I have not had their experiences. I have not felt like their emotions that are tied to those powerful experiences that have shaped them to who they are today. So that's why I can't ever understand and try and convince them like, hey, you should have my experiences that I had my whole life
yeah.
that have shaped me. It doesn't work that way. So that's why I really, really feel that God or whoever is in charge, you know, puts these experiences with these emotions tied to those experiences in our life to shape us to who we are today for our greater good. And that's why I feel that there's like, you know, there's 7 billion people on this earth. There's 7 billion paths. But I also really believe that it comes in phases where like 10 years ago, I was on a different path. I was a different person.
Sure.
I'm who I am today. I probably won't be in 10 years. So I have to be open to change with as new experiences come and new emotions with those experiences to shape me to who I'm supposed to be in 10 years from now. So I'm okay with being wrong.
Yeah.
Like with who I am today versus before, I'm like, no, I know everything. I know where we were before. I know why we're here. I know exactly where I'm going. And now I'm like, you know what? I don't know any of that. And I'm okay with not knowing. So I'm okay with being wrong. And I feel like everybody has their own path in life. And I feel like if we had empathy and respect for other people on their path, there wouldn't be so much divisiveness and hate and judgment in this world. But, you know, my hope is that as people have more experiences in this life, you know, it is more of a peaceful experience for other people as they look at other people and their life. Does
Definitely.
That make sense?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, for sure. That's a great
That was a long
to
answer to.
No, I mean, I asked
that was a long question,
question.
That was a long question
yeah.
too.
Yeah. Well, it just, that really stuck out to me because I'm always, I don't know. I'm curious how, I guess just having, you know, been close to people who are very religious, some people who aren't at all. And then you're kind of just, you know, out into the world doing your own thing now. I'm just sort of interested in hearing your perspective on all of that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I can only speak to my experiences.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
And so
yes.
That's what feels true to me, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like if you're stuck in your ways and you're like, I know the truth and I'm never changing, I don't know if that's like the best approach because then,
yeah,
you
definitely.
Know. So.
The great thing now is like the internet exists. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
I feel like if one thing is told to you and you're like, mm-hmm. this is the answer, this is exactly how we got here. But then you just go online and like you can get a million different stories and articles to read and different like perspectives. It's like, the internet just like opens the world up a little bit more.
It does. And not to go back to keto, but like if we were stuck in the ways of like low fat, low cholesterol, like that's the way to go. We were wrong about that, you know?
Yeah.
Like so many people suffered and died and still do because of that mentality that was pushed on us. And now we realize, oh, there's other science out there that shows the opposite. Well, then maybe we were wrong. And so that's what I'm saying is like with the internet and religion, like sometimes for me and my experience with Mormonism, there were some things that I was told that didn't happen that way. And we were told, you know, kind of lies and half truths and things were omitted. And now we're like, hey, this stuff wasn't told to us. Why not? It was covered up.
Yeah.
And now people are having to like, oh, well, this and that and like excuses for it. And just help. It just makes you not trust those people that you once trusted. Because back in the 70s and 80s, before the internet, it was like, hey, this is what was told. This is what God said to me. And this is what we're supposed to do. And people are like, oh, well, yeah, I have no reason to question that. So, yeah, sounds good.
Sounds great.
Sounds right.
It's all gravy.
Exactly. And so now it's like, oh, well, now we can fact check things and realize, well, this was wrong. And even in the Mormon church and the history of that, there were some things that were told to us as truths. And now it's like, okay, these things aren't true and they were a mistake. And if we can make mistakes about things that we thought were true, then how do we know that what's being told now isn't true or isn't the right thing? And so that's what's hard. It's like, well, do we want to be on the right side of history or do we want to be on like, you know, the right side of just following what we're told to believe?
Right.
That's like the question.
Like sheep.
Sheeple, is that what you said?
Sheeple, yeah. So you wrote a book about keto.
Yes.
Didn't you? And you have two books out.
So I have Fit to Pet to Fit and I'm writing a second book about keto. So it'll launch in February 2019. So stay tuned, people. It's going
to
be huge.
So I downloaded just because I wanted to see what would happen on your website when you can sign up for like to do sort of like the get a keto meal plan.
60-day keto meal plan. Yeah.
And so I've gotten emails and it's really cool because like I know you're here and it's like, hey, Kelly, I saw you downloaded the, you know, whatever. So that's, do you get, going back to keto and all of that, how long do you feel like your clients stick with it?
That's a good question. I mean, I have people who have been doing keto for well over a year.
Yeah.
Some people do the 6-day program and stop. Some people love it so much and they continue on. And they, like people, I have two Facebook groups, one that's like 37,000, one that's like almost 6,000.
Wow.
And people are in there talking about their keto journey and how it's changed their lives and how they've gotten their kids on it and their spouses and like their friends are doing it now who are joining the group. And so some people do it for 60 days. Some people do it for longer.
Do you feel like the keto is a different experience sometimes for men versus women?
100%. Just like any other diet, it's different because hormones play a factor, physiological differences in men and women. But not like all women experience this and all men experience that. Right. It's very bio individual, no matter what sex you are. But like, for example, some women that might have thyroid issues or, some other hormonal issues, it can affect them in different ways versus a man that, you know, I'll say most men lose weight quicker just in general.
Yeah.
Just physiologically, you know, it's totally different, but, there's plenty of women that have seen really good results on keto.
Yeah.
And then there's some men that have suffered that haven't seen any results. But I would say the majority, you know, of men do see really good results. And I would say the majority of women too. But there's more cases in women that kind of still struggle because their hormones are imbalanced. And it's not like a quick fix.
Gotcha. I was actually reading something that you wrote. I don't know if it was on your website or somewhere else about like kind of mistakes people make. And related to the keto flu, because that gets like thrown out there a lot when you first start doing it and you feel bad.
Yeah.
And you said something about like you're not ingesting enough electrolytes, right? Is that part of it?
100%. That's where most people experience the keto flu is because they're dehydrated and their electrolytes are imbalanced. So I'll explain it in a nutshell. Basically, you know, when you go keto and you eat mostly fat, your body's not retaining as much water. So your body is expelling a lot of water from your body. And with that water that's getting expelled, you know, you'll pee a lot and you'll lose a lot of water weight as you're losing a lot of minerals and electrolytes, sodium, potassium, and magnesium. So if you don't replenish those, you're going to feel awful. You're going to feel miserable. Headaches, you know, lightheadedness, dizzy, cramping, brain fog initially.
like, what is this diet doing to my body?
People feel like they're dying. They're like, this keto diet sucks.
This is terrible.
So that's where most people experience the keto flu, is the first 1 to 2 weeks. But if they stay on top of their hydration and they add in enough sodium, which is you're supposed to add like 5 to 7 grams per day, which is like 2.5 teaspoons, right? To your diet, or you can take, you know, in supplement form as well. And they need to get in magnesium and potassium either through their food or supplement form. Otherwise, they're going to feel miserable, right? Because they're not retaining as much water and they're not, you know, eating any carbohydrates. And so they need to replenish those electrolytes to minimize the keto flu experience.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Because here's the thing. You've been living your whole life off of glucose, which is a fast-burning energy. So 30, 40 years, depending on your age. And now all of a sudden you're saying to your body, okay, no more glucose. Now you're going to have to learn how to use ketones. And your body's like, what are ketones? Like, I don't know how to use these things. And so it takes a good while for your body to get adapted and become efficient at using ketones as an energy source. And so that's why I tell people, like, give it a minimum of a good 30 days consistent effort. Don't base it off of the first day or two, because, you might feel horrible.
Yeah.
But your body takes time to adjust and adapt, but it will adjust and adapt. Just be patient with it. Stay consistent and you'll feel better. But stay on top of your electrolytes and your water, and those are a couple hacks you can do. There's also exogenous ketone supplementation that can help out during that transition. So there's some hacks out there to help out.
Yeah. I was reading on Reddit, someone, I don't know if you go on Reddit a lot, but someone, there's like a keto subreddit, and someone said, the ketogenic diet is basically a life hack. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a way to kind of hack your life to live longer, better.
It is. And I see it that way. That's why I fell in love with it, because your mind's so much sharper. It's anti-aging. It's anti-inflammatory. You only have to eat once or twice a day instead of like 6 or 7 times a day, like most people. And your digestion's better, and you feel so much better throughout the day. So it can be a life hack, for sure. If you decide to live it, this lifestyle. But if you look at it as a diet, like, okay, I'm going to do it for 30 days and then I'll stop. It's like, then it's just going to be a diet. So biohacking is really popular these days. It's a very sexy word that a lot of people are doing. And so they're looking for ways to hack their body. And like, this is one of the ways to do that. Like, you want to, you know, burn fat as energy. You want to feel full and satiated in a sharp, clear mind and not feel hangry. Keto is a great way to do that. So if you're a busy mom, dad, entrepreneur, business owner, CEO, and you don't have a lot of time to sit down and eat your meals like every 3 hours and set your alarm, I think keto is a great way to do that, to biohack your body and your mind.
I knew it was popular when I saw Vinny from the Jersey Shore. He has another Instagram called Keto Guido.
Yes, I saw that. If he's doing it, it must work.
I'm like, I don't watch the Jersey Shore, but I know that they have another, like, they're filming now. Yeah. And I, like, started looking at his Instagram, the Keto Guido Instagram, and he's like, I've been filming in Vegas. I've been off the keto. Because I think he, you know, probably, because if you eat carbs, it knocks you out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, so he was probably indulging in his Jersey Shore shoredom. But yeah, I was like, wow, it's everywhere.
It is.
Well, and of course, if anyone, you know, wants to investigate it more, I feel like you have 100 million podcasts about it, I'm sure. And I mean, your whole website is dedicated to it. So when is your book going to come out?
February 2019. I can't announce too much more than that. So just early in 2019, be on the lookout for it. It's a complete transformational guide, not just to like keto. Keto is a big part of it for sure. It's a keto approach. But it's also hacking the mental, emotional, and spiritual side of health and fitness, which a lot of people don't talk about, because all we focus on in the health and fitness industry is like, what's the quickest way to lose the most amount of weight with the least amount of effort in the shortest amount of time? Like, what's the magic pill? That's cool, but that's not the end all be all. And that doesn't bring you extra happiness in your life. Like, that doesn't mean you're going to be happier. So don't hate yourself to healthy, right? Like, if you can learn to love yourself now while you're working on a better version of yourself, that's how you're going to find true happiness in health and fitness. Like, you'll get the results that you want. And I think keto is a great approach to that, but also you got to balance out the mental, emotional, spiritual side as well. Cause you could have a good looking body and be skinny, but if you're suffering mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, like, you'll be miserable in this life. Yeah. I know so many people with six packs or low body fat percentage that look great, but on the inside they're insecure. They hate themselves. They're never good enough. They look at other people that way as well. And they're miserable because all they focus on is the physical aspect of transformation. And transformation for me, a complete transformation, is so much more than that. And so that's kind of what this book is going to hopefully achieve with a lot of people.
Yeah. So. And honestly, I feel like the energy that you put out seriously changes everything around you. Like if you come to work and you're sort of like, all right, it's hard sometimes, but all right, I get to do this. I get to put
the
news out to the world.
Instead of I have to do this.
It just changes your whole outlook. You know, if things go wrong, it's sort of like, okay, how can I fix it? Versus no, another thing is broken, or you know what I mean? It really changes your whole, and when it comes to fitness and eating healthy, it's like if you you know, are thankful that you have limbs and the ability to run and all of that, and just look at this awesome thing that I have and I can feel it well and, you know, work out and whatnot. I feel like that really changes.
Yeah, it's about helpful. That changing that mindset. And it takes some training, right? It doesn't happen overnight, but change your mindset, change your perception. You have the control to change your perception, change your story, which will change your life.
Yeah.
So you can't always control what happens to you, but you can look at it as happening for you and what you can learn from that.
Yeah, definitely.
So
when are you going back to Utah?
Tomorrow night. Got to fly back and get some stuff done. And then I get my girls next week. And so, looking forward to that.
Nice. Do you have anything else fun planned while you're here? You're doing maybe
I have another podcast. Yeah, another friend of mine called the Align Podcast.
Oh.
Really excited to go on that one.
Cool.
And then I have to catch a flight at LAX. And you know how traffic is there. So
LAX is the greatest place in America.
I just love the traffic at LAX. It's
LAX
so much fun.
LAX is the absolute worst place to be welcome to Los Angeles. Like, if you could fly into like John Wayne in Orange County or Burbank Airport even, I never do because LAX has the cheapest flights. Trying to save a dollar.
Trying to save a dollar.
And sometimes you can fly into LAX, but then sometimes it's like, all right, well, I'm going to miss my flight. Because, unless you have pre-check, that helps.
Yes. Luckily, I'm already pre-checked and ready to go.
There you go. Like a pro.
Just got to get there. That's the hard part.
Yeah. Well, good luck very much
with
that.
Well, thank you.
Well, thanks for taking the time to come here.
Yeah, and, thanks for having me on.
I know we changed the time a lot. Sorry.
That's okay. We made it work. First world problems, remember?
Yes, exactly. okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Kelly.
Appreciate it. Thank you for listening to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. If you're enjoying the show, tell a friend about it, or better yet, leave us a rating and review on your podcast app. If you haven't yet, hit the subscribe button to get new episodes automatically downloaded onto your phone. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and olympicandbundy.com. Once again, I'm Kelly Taylor, and thank you very much for listening.